Test 3. Now, open your question paper and look at part 1. Part 1. You'll hear people talking in 8 different situations. For questions 1 to 8, choose the best answer, A, B or C. Situation 1. You will hear someone asking a friend to do them a favour.
Oh, come on, Mike. It's not really that much to ask for. I'll just be away for 1 week, and you know how much Bonnie loves you. But whatever you do, don't mention it to Sue. She'll think she's being rejected. But quite frankly, she's unreliable.
But I'm really busy that week, Julie. I'm not sure I can find the time.
Oh, of course you can, Mike. Look, you don't have to do anything except feed her. I've bought all the food so you don't have to go out and buy it yourself.
I'll see what I can do, Julie, but I'm not promising anything.
Oh, come on, Mike. It's not really that much to ask for. I'll just be away for 1 week, and you know how much Bonnie loves you. But whatever you do, don't mention it to Sue. She'll think she's being rejected. But, quite frankly, she's unreliable.
But I'm really busy that week, Julie. I'm not sure I can find the time.
Oh, of course you can, Mike. Look, you don't have to do anything except feed her. I've bought all the food so you don't have to go out and buy it yourself.
I'll see what I can do, Julie, but I'm not promising anything. Situation 2. You overhear someone talking on the phone. I'm taking history tomorrow, but I haven't done a stroke of revision, and it's usually my best subject. If only I could fall ill and be forced to spend tomorrow at home in bed. What do you mean you're going to town? Haven't you got exams too? No, I can't. In any case, my dad works in the centre. No, I think I'd better work all night and go and take the exam tomorrow. It's the right thing to do. I'm taking history tomorrow, but I haven't done a stroke of revision, and it's usually my best subject. If only I could fall ill and be forced to spend tomorrow at home in bed. What do you mean you're going to town? Haven't you got exams too? No, I can't. In any case, my dad works in the centre. No. I think I'd better work all night and go and take the exam tomorrow. It's the right thing to do. Situation 3. You will hear a husband and wife talking about a book he's bought for their son. Look, Alexandra, I got this book for Alistair. I know it's old-fashioned in style, but it's really cute. What do you think?
Give it here. Let's have a look. Well, it's certainly well illustrated.
Don't you like it?
Well, you know, I object to animals being portrayed as having human qualities. How can you expect him to ever want to eat meat when you read him all these stories about little chickens and sheep riding their scooters or going to parties?
Look, Alexandra, I got this book for Alistair. I know it's old-fashioned in style, but it's really cute. What do you think?
Give it here. Let's have a look. Well, it's certainly well illustrated.
Don't you like it?
Well, you know, I object to animals being portrayed as having human qualities. How can you expect him to ever want to eat meat when you read him all these stories about little chickens and sheep riding their scooters or going to parties?
Situation 4. You will hear part of a wildlife program on the radio. This enormous owl is certainly no native to the British Isles. It comes from the mountains of Asia, North Africa, and continental Europe. However, because it is a favourite with collectors of exotic birds and breeds very successfully in captivity, it is found quite widely in British collections. But it's a rather fierce bird and is extremely successful at escaping. Unfortunately, several of these birds are now breeding in the wild in Britain, and they could cause a lot of bother as they are quite capable of carrying off large dogs and cats. This enormous owl is certainly no native to the British Isles. It comes from the mountains of Asia, North Africa, and continental Europe. However, because it is a favourite with collectors of exotic birds and breeds very successfully in captivity, it is found quite widely in British collections. But it's a rather fierce bird and is extremely successful at escaping. Unfortunately, several of these birds are now breeding in the wild in Britain, and they could cause a lot of bother as they are quite capable of carrying off large dogs and cats. Situation 5. You will hear someone leaving a voicemail message. Hi Jane, Brian here. I've been trying to reach you all day. I don't have to go to my grandparents tomorrow after all, so I can join you, which is great. I've been dying to see that film for weeks. Are you going to ask Liam? I know he's back in town and he'd love to see you. Oh, and one more thing. Remember I asked you to get in touch with Mr. Lewis? Well, I ran into him myself the other day and sorted it all out, so you don't need to contact him. See you tonight. Hi Jane, Brian here. I've been trying to reach you all day. I don't have to go to my grandparents tomorrow after all, so I can join you, which is great. I've been dying to see that film for weeks. Are you going to ask Liam? I know he's back in town and he'd love to see you. Oh, and one more thing. Remember I asked you to get in touch with Mr. Lewis? Well, I ran into him myself the other day and sorted it all out, so you don't need to contact him. See you tonight. Situation 6. You will hear two friends talking about their plans. That was a great week in Scotland. Let's do it again sometime.
Agreed, Fred. But let me save up a bit first. You won't believe how much I spent. But I do have enough left to buy that coat I saw yesterday in the West End. Fancy coming along with me this afternoon?
Fine, but I'm not free until after 4. Is that okay with you?
No problem. I'll ask Jonathan too.
I'd be surprised if he came, but give it a try.
I will. Speak to you later.
That was a great week in Scotland. Let's do it again sometime.
Agreed, Fred. But let me save up a bit first. You won't believe how much I spent. But I do have enough left to buy that coat I saw yesterday in the West End. Fancy coming along with me this afternoon?
Fine, but I'm not free until after 4. Is that okay with you?
No problem. I'll ask Jonathan too.
I'd be surprised if he came, but give it a try.
I will. Speak to you later.
Situation 7. You will hear a policeman talking to a group of young people. I'm sure you've all been warned about the dangers of drinking and driving, so I'm not going to spend any time talking about that today. There's nothing new I can say on the subject. Now, we are looking for young people like you to help us try and reduce the number of traffic accidents among young people. It's tragic how many young people lose their lives every year, and our theory is that the young are more likely to listen to people of their own age than people who are older. So, what I want to do is... I'm sure you've all been warned about the dangers of drinking and driving, so I'm not going to spend any time talking about that today. There's nothing new I can say on the subject. Now, we are looking for young people like you to help us try and reduce the number of traffic accidents among young people. It's tragic how many young people lose their lives every year, and our theory is that the young are more likely to listen to people of their own age than people who are older. So, what I want to do is... Situation 8. You will hear a news item on the radio about a man and his dog.
And from the United States of America, we have for you today a tragic variant on the man bites dog kind of news story. An American soldier visiting his mother during a leave decided to teach her how to use a gun after a series of burglaries in the neighborhood. While he was trying to explain how to use the safety catch, his mother's dog jumped onto his lap and hit the pistol, triggering the shot that killed him. The bullet tore through his heart and he died instantly without feeling any pain. Strangely enough, this is not the first time that a pet has accidentally taken the life of its owner. And from the United States of America, we have for you today a tragic variant on the man bites dog kind of news story. An American soldier visiting his mother during a leave decided to teach her how to use a gun after a series of burglaries in the neighborhood. While he was trying to explain how to use the safety catch, his mother's dog jumped onto his lap and hit the pistol, triggering the shot that killed him. The bullet tore through his heart and he died instantly without feeling any pain. Strangely enough, this is not the first time that a pet has accidentally taken the life of its owner.
That is the end of part one. Now turn to part two. Test three, part two. You'll hear a lecture on the poet and playwright Ben Jonson. For questions 9 to 18, complete the sentences with a word or short phrase. You now have 45 seconds to look at part two.
Ben Jonson was born in 1572 and died in 1637. He was an English dramatist and poet with a great gift for satire and, as such, one of the great figures of English literature. Jonson was born in Westminster in 1572 and received a classical education at the Westminster School while training to be a bricklayer like his stepfather. In 1592, he joined a London theatrical company as an actor and trainee playwright, revising plays which were already in the repertoire. By 1598, Jonson had written his first play, Every Man in His Humour, which was performed by the Lord Chamberlain's company, and William Shakespeare himself was one of the actors. His next play appeared in 1599 and was called Every Man Out of His Humour. As you can tell from the titles, his first two plays explored the same ideas. The word humour means temperament, character, disposition, or idiosyncrasy. Ben Jonson had invented a variety of contemporary comedy concerning strange and funny characters. Each one of these characters represented a type of idiosyncrasy of human nature. During the next 4 years, Ben Jonson wrote a number of satirical comedies, such as Cynthia's Revels in 1600 and A Poetaster in 1601, in which he satirised some contemporary writers, especially the English dramatist Tom Dekker and John Marston. Dekker and Marston paid him back by attacking him in their famous Satiromastrix in 1600. But later on, the writers settled their differences and made up. And so, in 1604, Jonson and Dekker together created The King's Entertainment. And in 1605, Jonson collaborated with Marston and George Chapman to produce Eastward Ho, which was great success. In fact, they had resolved their differences to such a degree that, when Marston and Chapman were imprisoned for some of the views expressed in Eastward Ho, Jonson joined them in prison voluntarily. After 1603, Jonson started writing masques, a type of play popular in England in the 16th and 17th centuries that included music, dancing and songs. He wrote the masques for the entertainment of the court of King James I. Indeed, from 1616, Ben Jonson seems to have fulfilled the role of poet laureate. A poet laureate is a poet who is chosen and appointed by a queen, king or president to write poems on important occasions. His masques demonstrated his education and wit and contained some of his very best poetry. At the same time as being poet laureate, Jonson also wrote for the commercial theatre. In fact, it was precisely during this period that he produced two brilliant historical tragedies and the four equally brilliant comedies for which he is known as a playwright to this day. Jonson's later plays were never as popular or as successful, but he remained a leading figure among the writers of his time. In spite of his quarrels and disagreements with other writers, Jonson was the leader of a group of Elizabethan poets and playwrights who gathered at the Mermaid Tavern in the heart of London. The tavern, which took its name from the painted sign of a mermaid hanging outside its door, became one of the most famous of Elizabethan inns precisely because these people met there and discussed their art. Jonson's importance today lies on his comedies of manners and their clever and humorous depiction of contemporary London life.
Now you'll hear part two again.
Ben Jonson was born in 1572 and died in 1637. He was an English dramatist and poet with a great gift for satire and, as such, one of the great figures of English literature. Jonson was born in Westminster in 1572 and received a classical education at the Westminster School while training to be a bricklayer like his stepfather. In 1592, he joined a London theatrical company as an actor and trainee playwright, revising plays which were already in the repertoire. By 1598, Jonson had written his first play, Every Man in His Humour, which was performed by the Lord Chamberlain's company, and William Shakespeare himself was one of the actors. His next play appeared in 1599 and was called Every Man Out of His Humour. As you can tell from the titles, his first two plays explored the same ideas. The word humour means temperament, character, disposition, or idiosyncrasy. Ben Jonson had invented a variety of contemporary comedy concerning strange and funny characters. Each one of these characters represented a type of idiosyncrasy of human nature. During the next 4 years, Ben Jonson wrote a number of satirical comedies, such as Cynthia's Revels in 1600 and The Poetaster in 1601, in which he satirised some contemporary writers, especially the English dramatist Tom Dekker and John Marston. Dekker and Marston paid him back by attacking him in their famous Satiromastrix in 1600. But later on, the writers settled their differences and made up. And so, in 1604, Jonson and Dekker together created The King's Entertainment. And in 1605, Jonson collaborated with Marston and George Chapman to produce Eastward Ho, which was great success. In fact, they had resolved their differences to such a degree that, when Marston and Chapman were imprisoned for some of the views expressed in Eastward Ho, Jonson joined them in prison voluntarily. After 1603, Jonson started writing masks, a type of play popular in England in the 16th and 17th centuries that included music, dancing and songs. He wrote the masks for the entertainment of the court of King James I. Indeed, from 1616, Ben Jonson seems to have fulfilled the role of poet laureate. A poet laureate is a poet who is chosen and appointed by a queen, king or president to write poems on important occasions. His masks demonstrated his education and wit and contained some of his very best poetry. At the same time as being poet laureate, Jonson also wrote for the commercial theatre. In fact, it was precisely during this period that he produced two brilliant historical tragedies and the four equally brilliant comedies for which he is known as a playwright to this day. Jonson's later plays were never as popular or as successful, but he remained a leading figure among the writers of his time. In spite of his quarrels and disagreements with other writers, Jonson was the leader of a group of Elizabethan poets and playwrights who gathered at the Mermaid Tavern in the heart of London. The tavern, which took its name from the painted sign of a mermaid hanging outside its door, became one of the most famous of Elizabethan inns precisely because these people met there and discussed their art. Jonson's importance today lies on his comedies of manners and their clever and humorous depiction of contemporary London life.
That is the end of part two. Now turn to part three. Part three. you will hear 5 short extracts in which people are talking about shopping. For questions 19 to 23, choose from the list A to H what each speaker says about it. Use the letters only once. There are 3 extra letters which you do not need to use. You now have 30 seconds to look at part 3. Speaker 1.
I'm a reluctant shopper, and I resent the time it takes away from my tennis playing. My husband does most of the food shopping because he does the cooking and he knows what he likes. I don't spend much time shopping for clothes either, at least not for myself. I do take my 6-year-old son and 14-year-old daughter clothes shopping, but I don't enjoy that either, as we all have very different tastes. I don't spend money on myself regularly, so when I do splash out, I tend to feel guilty and rarely tell my husband exactly how much I've spent. The actual sum usually sounds too shocking.
Speaker 2. I don't enjoy shopping at all. I really dislike shopping for clothes, as I can never find what I want or anyone to help me look for it. The shops are too noisy. Everything is disordered and I find it an absolute nightmare. Fortunately, I rarely have to shop for clothes, as most of my clothes are given to me. As for food shopping, I go to the local supermarket once a week and get it over and done with very quickly. Speaker 3.
I'm an addict. I can never shop enough. When I do have the cash, I'm out there and then I'm not miserable anymore. I definitely have difficulty ignoring sales signs. Luckily, my boyfriend's exactly the same, so we often take each other shopping. Unfortunately, because we both spend so much on shopping, we never have enough money to do anything else, such as join our friends at the pub for a drink, go out for a meal, or go on holiday. But hey, you can't have it all, can you?
Speaker 4.
I'm probably a happy shopper. Sometimes I'll go out for a look around the shops with my girlfriends and will often end up buying things. I don't usually go out with a certain item in mind, but if something catches my eye, I'll buy it. I don't waste time and I'm in and out in minutes. I do have hidden mistakes at the back of my wardrobe, though, so maybe I should take more time and care.
Speaker 5. I love shopping, but only on certain days and never on a Saturday, as it's far too busy. I'd say I'm a careful shopper. I always set off with a fair idea of what I want, and I never snap things up immediately. I have to look in other shops in case I can find a better bargain. It takes ages. I find shopping is the best remedy when you're feeling a bit down. Buying a top that makes me look good is a real tonic. Now you'll hear part 3 again. Speaker 1.
I'm a reluctant shopper, and I resent the time it takes away from my tennis playing. My husband does most of the food shopping because he does the cooking and he knows what he likes. I don't spend much time shopping for clothes either, at least not for myself. I do take my 6-year-old son and 14-year-old daughter clothes shopping, but I don't enjoy that either, as we all have very different tastes. I don't spend money on myself regularly, so when I do splash out, I tend to feel guilty and rarely tell my husband exactly how much I've spent. The actual sum usually sounds too shocking.
Speaker 2. I don't enjoy shopping at all. I really dislike shopping for clothes, as I can never find what I want, or anyone to help me look for it. The shops are too noisy. Everything is disordered, and I find it an absolute nightmare. Fortunately, I rarely have to shop for clothes, as most of my clothes are given to me. As for food shopping, I go to the local supermarket once a week and get it over and done with very quickly. Speaker 3.
I'm an addict. I can never shop enough. When I do have the cash, I'm out there and then I'm not miserable anymore. I definitely have difficulty ignoring sale signs. Luckily, my boyfriend's exactly the same, so we often take each other shopping. Unfortunately, because we both spend so much on shopping, we never have enough money to do anything else, such as join our friends at the pub for a drink, go out for a meal, or go on holiday. But hey, you can't have it all, can you?
Speaker 4.
I'm probably a happy shopper. Sometimes I'll go out for a look around the shops with my girlfriends and will often end up buying things. I don't usually go out with a certain item in mind, but if something catches my eye, I'll buy it. I don't waste time and I'm in and out in minutes. I do have hidden mistakes at the back of my wardrobe, though, so maybe I should take more time and care.
Speaker 5. I love shopping, but only on certain days and never on a Saturday, as it's far too busy. I'd say I'm a careful shopper. I always set off with a fair idea of what I want, and I never snap things up immediately. I have to look in other shops in case I can find a better bargain. It takes ages. I find shopping is the best remedy when you're feeling a bit down. Buying a top that makes me look good is a real tonic. That's the end of part 3. Now turn to part 4. Test 3, part 4. You will hear an interview about the singer and actor Justin Bieber. For questions 24 to 30, choose the best answer, A, B or C. You now have 1 minute to look at part 4.
Good evening and welcome to our special feature on Justin Bieber. We have with us tonight Tom Jenkins from Teen Speak magazine, who's going to talk about the young Canadian singing sensation Justin Bieber and the film he stars in, Never Say Never, which has only just been released. Hello, Tom, and welcome.
Hello, Emma, and thank you. Well, sensation is the word. I must say that I found the film quite impressive. It's a delightful film which puts across the idea that you can achieve anything in life provided you make enough of an effort. It was well produced and not at all sentimental, which could well have been the case.
Would you say it's a family film?
Only if you're a family composed of teenagers, I'm afraid. That might be my only criticism, that there isn't much in the film for any other generation of people. However, Justin pulls off a remarkable performance, very convincing and enjoyable.
Justin also seems to be a talented musician.
That's right. He taught himself to play the piano, the drums, and finally, when he was a bit older, the guitar, which has remained his favourite instrument, as far as I know.
He has a huge number of fans, but anyone that famous is bound to have a few enemies too, although it's difficult to imagine that in Justin's case.
You are right. He's a very popular young man, but he has expressed his opinions quite strongly on a couple of occasions, and that hasn't been received very well by everyone. He's young and passionate about things. What can I say?
And he's Canadian. Everyone loves Canadians, don't they? Has he got any heroes? Anyone he sees as a role model?
I don't think so. He's very much his own man. Or should I say, boy? Anyway, his individuality is one of the things I find attractive about him. He has mentioned famous names in interviews, but not in a sense of, I wish I were them. He's very down-to-earth and sensible. He was most upset at the death of Michael Jackson, and he is determined that he will not suffer the same bitter end. He's also determined that fame and fortune won't take over his life. Although he enjoys being famous to an extent, he is also quite aware of the fact that things could change overnight in this line of business, and so he hasn't let it affect his life in a major way.
And what do you think the future holds for him?
Well, he's a very bright and talented young man, and he's onto a winning formula, so I can't imagine him changing his career. Why should he?
Thank you very much for talking to us, Tom.
Now you'll hear part four again.
Good evening and welcome to our special feature on Justin Bieber. We have with us tonight Tom Jenkins from Teen Speak magazine, who's going to talk about the young Canadian singing sensation Justin Bieber and the film he stars in, Never Say Never, which has only just been released. Hello, Tom, and welcome.
Hello, Emma, and thank you. Well, sensation is the word. I must say that I found the film quite impressive. It's a delightful film which puts across the idea that you can achieve anything in life provided you make enough of an effort. It was well produced and not at all sentimental, which could well have been the case.
Would you say it's a family film?
Only if you're a family composed of teenagers, I'm afraid. That might be my only criticism, that there isn't much in the film for any other generation of people. However, Justin pulls off a remarkable performance, very convincing and enjoyable.
Justin also seems to be a talented musician.
That's right. He taught himself to play the piano, the drums, and finally, when he was a bit older, the guitar, which has remained his favourite instrument, as far as I know.
He has a huge number of fans, but anyone that famous is bound to have a few enemies too, although it's difficult to imagine that in Justin's case.
You are right. He's a very popular young man, but he has expressed his opinions quite strongly on a couple of occasions, and that hasn't been received very well by everyone. He's young and passionate about things. What can I say?
And he's Canadian. Everyone loves Canadians, don't they? Has he got any heroes? Anyone he sees as a role model?
I don't think so. He's very much his own man, or should I say, boy. Anyway, his individuality is one of the things I find attractive about him. He has mentioned famous names in interviews, but not in a sense of, I wish I were them. He's very down-to-earth and sensible. He was most upset at the death of Michael Jackson, and he is determined that he will not suffer the same bitter end. He's also determined that fame and fortune won't take over his life. Although he enjoys being famous to an extent, he is also quite aware of the fact that things could change overnight in this line of business, and so he hasn't let it affect his life in a major way.
And what do you think the future holds for him?
Well, he's a very bright and talented young man, and he's onto a winning formula, so I can't imagine him changing his career. Why should he?
Thank you very much for talking to us, Tom.
That's the end of part four. There will now be a pause of 5 minutes for you to copy your answers onto the separate answer sheet.